Welcome to the Pop Culture Cosmos.
And we're back with another episode of the Pop Culture Cosmos. It's Gerald Glassford coming right back at you here from the Pop Culture Cosmos. Lakers Fast Break and Inside Sports Fantasy Football. Go ahead and check out all the things that we do right here for you on the Pop Culture Cosmos channel. Please make sure you follow, like, and subscribe. If you're following us on Facebook, you will get a notification tomorrow that there will be a link available for the latest Deadpool and Wolverine trailer. So go ahead and check that out today. Or excuse me, when you're listening to this on Monday, go ahead and check it out then. Right there for you at the Pop Culture Cosmos on Facebook. But don't forget, we do a whole bunch of stuff, including we are going into the behind-the-scenes stuff at popculturecosmos.wordpress.com. We are doing what we can to make sure it's a great destination for you. We've gotten subscribers on that WordPress site in the past few couple weeks. And so welcome to everything that we do right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. But it wouldn't be a Pop Culture Cosmos without my dear friend, indeed, my fellow National University alumni. You've got to go ahead and check out every single timeout at the Happy Hoarder. Please support his GoFundMe. Please support his site, Happy Hoarder. Please support his social media at Happy Hoarder Collectibles. It is Josh the Great Peterson. Josh, another week in pop culture. A little light on the news, but we will devote the back half to Zack Snyder, and it may not be the kind of devotion he wants, but you said you had something you wanted to drop as soon as we went on the air. So what was it, my friend? Please give me the inside scoop.
Yeah, that's really just rude, man. You just hit the timer right as I was about to talk. I'm just kidding. You're fine.
Well, it does it well in advance. So.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
You had about a minute to go ahead.
Yeah, I was trying to get all my thoughts out, and then I went switch over to the countdown. Okay, so I was thinking about this the other day. You know, everyone's talking about like what's going to be shown at the Summer Games this year. There's talk of like Gear 6. Like, what's going on?
You mean the E3 that's not E3, but still E3 because they all do it right around the same time, which would have been around E3?
Exactly. Exactly. Right. There's like the Ubisoft Forward, there's the EA Play or whatever, there's the Xbox. Then Sony will do something like a week later, Nintendo does their Treehouse or whatever it's called.
Can you tell I'm still a little bit bitter about E3 being not killed off?
Here's my theory on that. I feel like everyone has discovered the power of advertisements on their own platform and them being able to get all that revenue from that. So they're like, oh, why are we paying all this money and then having another company make money off of us? Why don't we just do it ourselves?
I'd put it on YouTube, get all the views, and there you go. Get the ad dollars. I get
exactly.
That.
Yep. That's it. No, but I was thinking about this. Like, we have Gear 6 has been in limbo for a long time. I'm assuming we're going to hear something about that. That's what the word floating around the internet is. So I have two questions, one pertaining to Gears, one pertaining to Halo. When it comes to Gears, so Gears went semi-open world in the last iteration. Did you ever play it, Gears 5?
Yes, a little bit. I actually have it. I'm looking at it right now, my friend, right there. So,
okay.
Even though I don't actually need the physical copy because I have it on Games Pass.
This is very true. This is very true. So Gears 5 went like semi-open world. You played as Kate, I think her name was, and you who was in the game, JD, or I forgot the other guy's name, is like all depended on like who you chose to save in the end of was it Gears 4, I think. Mm-hmm. But so I'm thinking about this. Xbox has kind of ruined these franchises, like ruined the stories being told by both of them by handing them off to people who thought that they knew what people wanted from these games but didn't actually know. So like, I play Gears for the story, I play Halo for the story, but these companies got so focused on the multiplayer aspects of multiplayer hordes, I forget what, Firefight and Halo, that they kind of let the narrative of the stories that which a majority of people play these games for go to waste. So going into Gear 6, like what exactly would you like to see happen in this game in order to make the franchise feel interesting again?
Dave Bautista coming into the middle of it going, Oh, come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do a pretty good Marcus Fenix there, but
it was great. Yeah.
I would probably say just making it fun. That's the biggest point to me. I know Gear 6 is probably going to be hinted at. It's been pretty much an open secret now how far it is in development. And I think it's a 2025 title. It may be a fall 2024, but I doubt it because I think they already shown all their cards, Xbox this year for the most part. But it's going to be a most likely a 2025 release, but it will be announced in June. I bet 50-50 on that one. I bet pretty hard on that one. So I would say what I would be looking for, just make the locusts, just make the whole battle for Sarah, if it's going to be the last one or what have you, just give it some weight and some context. And I think we've gone into the depths of where this battle in Sarah has taken. But I'd like to see some sort of finish or conclusion to it and them doing something else in the Gears universe.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think that the, I don't know, there's a weird obsession around the time that Gears 4 came out where of like lasting consequences for characters that, and I think that them having you choose between JD and the other character kind of ruined what Gears 5 could have been, because what makes those games so great, like especially the first three, is you have the banter between, you know, Marcus and Dom, and you had Baird and Cole. Like that team like made that game great. So even in like the serious moments, you had the dialogue between them made it good. So in this, Gears 5, you had Kate in there and she had to choose between JD and the other guy. And then whoever it was ended up coming back and being all serious. And I don't know, they made some choices in Gears 5 that I feel like have become detrimental to the franchise, and I don't know what they'd have to do going forward. But yes, you're right, they do need to make it fun again, but also they need to wrap this story up, because this story is not, I don't know, they can't keep dragging. They can't, what am I trying
it's
to say?
It's not that, like, it's been so bad, it's just gotten dark. I think it's gotten really dark.
Yeah, and there's so many threads going all over the place. So with like the Fenix family, you got Kate and her mom. I don't know, it's just not, I don't know what I'm trying to say. Like, the original story had its moments, right? It had its dark moments, yes, but it's still like fun. Then with Halo, you look at Halo and they did, like, Infinite was set up to be this like launching pad, right? The next big platform for Halo. And they totally just took away from everything that made the story of Halo so great, that narrative so interesting, that science fiction, like the science fiction story behind Halo. Like, they kind of ruined it by taking the focus off of the Forerunners, off of the Didact. They made you fight him in Halo 4, and then he just disappeared, and you had to know what happened to him. You have to read about it in a book. Like, that kind of irritates me. So what, you know, going forward, in your opinion, what do you think needs to happen with Halo's story in order to get people back into it, or even to make that franchise relevant again?
Well, I'm hoping first off that Phil Spencer sat down the teams, the Coalition and 343, and just said, look, you guys got to get this thing back on track to what the fan base loved the most and what they focused on the most in regards to the cogs and the locusts and gears, and just focus more on Master Chief and, like you said, with the Forerunners. But the problem is, when you have to go ahead and create so many of these iterations and you have to try to expand the story, you find yourself reaching for elements of storytelling that's just not going to resonate as well with the core fan base of what it got there. The thing is, it's so nice with trilogies, because trilogies, you can start a story, extend the story, and wrap up the story neatly. And not have to stray too far away from the path and make it what it's really all about. You know, obviously with the Star Wars trilogy, you could start right there and then extend on to other great trilogies, the Lord of the Rings trilogies, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. When you expand it to a 4, a 5, a 6, a 7, you know, it is just so hard to go ahead and continue that main storyline that grabbed and hooked people together. When you deviate from that, no matter how creative you think it is, it's just hard to keep that fan base grouped in. And I think that's been part of the problem with the Halo and Gears series to an extent, is that they've lost you and I, who were the hardcores, because I was huge into Halo. I was devoting hours, weeks, months, years of my life on Halo 2 multiplayer. When Gears came out and we were playing it religiously, because I was as far as Gears of War 1, Gears of War 2, but the multiplayer we were playing on a nightly basis. I had just started a new job running game stores around that time in 2007. Gears of War was something that had already come out. And my God, it was just such a great thing as far as that concept of, you know, 4-on-4 team battle, the way it was going as far. That was great. And then you had the story of about the Locusts and the Cog, just very centralized. Again, I think if I was Phil Spencer, I would have sat both teams down before they started work on the next Halo and Gears and just said, let's bring this back in. Let's reel this back in and make it more simplified so that we can bring in the, you know, we could just give people the same reasons, like once again, the reasons why they were in it in the first place.
Yeah, I agree. Like, you look at Halo, they got too focused on building a world. And who takes such an interesting story and then branches it off? If you want to know what happens, you got to read the books and the comic books. Like, nobody asked for that. And I don't know. I don't know what's happening with Halo. Like, it kind of, Halo Infinite, though it was the game itself was good, the story just kind of fizzled out. So I don't know what they're going to do or how they're going to fix it. It seems at this point like it's either go back to the, or reboot it. I mean, honestly, that's the only thing I can think of right now, is to reboot the entire series, because the story has gotten so messed up that there is really no turning back or fixing what they've done.
Once again, it is, of course, my good friend, Mr. Josh the Great Peterson, along with me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks so much again for watching and listening. But before we head to the break, I don't disagree with you. They do, you know, a reboot might be in plan, but I don't think I would do it with a Gear 6 or call it Gear 6. I mean, we saw Mortal Kombat recently do a reboot of sorts. That's a little different story, because nobody really cares about the story in Mortal Kombat. I really don't think it was a good idea. I know it sold pretty good, Mortal Kombat 1. It didn't sell like gangbusters, but it sold pretty good. It was a top 10 for video games of last year. I'm not sure it was the wisest idea to reboot that series, because again, it doesn't have really connective story that really absolutely anybody cares about. It was more about the gameplay and the, you know, battling with your friends or online type deal there, but it didn't work out spectacular for them. It worked out okay. I would say a reboot is necessary at some point in time. I just wouldn't do it now with Gear 6. If you already are calling it Gear 6, I would wait until you have a moment in time where you really need to go ahead on a number, on an absolutely a good number per se, like the 10th iteration, or I don't know. It just seems like it'd be a weird time right now to go ahead and do that. But I do agree with you. Maybe the year, maybe in 2030. You do a Halo Gears back-to-back and just boot it up from there and start fresh. I would just say right now is a weird time to go ahead and reboot those franchises.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but I keep thinking about it. When Xbox took over both of those studios, right, it was the Coalition, I think was Gears, and yes. 343, you know, they took over Halo from Bungie. They got so focused on what does the next 20 years of this game look like that they lost track of what should have been done in the here and now to maintain that fan base. And I hope that that is a lesson that Xbox has learned or will, you know, continue to apply moving forward.
You're listening to the Pop Culture Cosmos.
For the latest news and information, analysis and opinions on the Los Angeles Lakers and the NBA,
Check out the Lakers Fast Break podcast today on wherever you get your podcasts.
Once again, it is, of course, the Pop Culture Cosmos. It is Josh the Great Peterson. Please support him today at the Happy Hoarder, along with me, Gerald Glassford. Pop Culture Cosmos, Lakers Fast Break, and Inside Sports Fantasy Football. Just wanted to give a reminder, the NFL draft is later this week, and I will go ahead after that with the fallout. Talk to Lardieres on Inside Sports Fantasy Football, and we'll go ahead and post that here in the coming days as well on the winners and losers of the NFL draft. But Josh, getting back into what we're going to go ahead and talk about before we hit the break, the half hour break, and our discussion, maybe rant on Zack Snyder and the Snyderverse as are facing the franchise for this day. I wanted to go ahead and mention that it wasn't a great weekend for the box office. Civil War won in its second weekend here domestically, but in a very light under $15 million win. So I think everybody seems to be waiting for The Fall Guy with Ryan Gosling to see how that does in place of Marvel. And then also as well, of course, what's coming up later on in May with the Planet of the Apes movie. But for right now, my friend, we're in this kind of state of flux. I can't talk Shogun with you yet because the last episode hasn't aired. That's going to be on Tuesday. I'm excited to talk about that. I know Melinda wants to talk about Discovery, but there is some fallout from Fallout. So before I talk some NAB, National Association of Broadcasters, and my time spent there this year, what are your thoughts, my friends, on checking out Fallout so far? Again, I spoke very highly of it. I think The Last of Us just is a little tick better, but the world building and Fallout makes it one of the best video game adaptations of all time in its own right.
You know, it's funny. I've heard a lot of mixed reviews on Fallout. A lot of, like, the reviewers, the professional reviewers all loved it. The people who I know who are fans of the games have had different things to say about it. They're like, oh, it's okay, but it's not, you know, they kind of picked apart some things from the game in their adaptation. And it's kind of left me, having seen up to episode 6, I'm still in the midst of the series. I sit there and I think to myself, like, this is, you know, I'm not 100%. I'm not an expert on Fallout lore. Okay. Like, I loved Fallout 3, Fallout New Vegas. I dabbled in, and I have not played Fallout 4 yet. So that was one, you know, on my radar for sure.
I was more of a Fallout New Vegas guy. I played that, but I've only played 12, 15 hours of that. And I only played sparingly in Fallout 3 and 4. So I was even less enthralled coming into it. And I was pleasantly surprised with how much I enjoyed the series.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like, I really liked the series, and I think just the I have a casual knowledge of the lore of the show, and I think that helped me really enjoy it a little bit more. You know what I'm saying? Like, if we look at the show, the Halo show, and because we know that subject matter like very intimately, we're gonna be a lot harsher in our critique of the show. Whereas with Fallout, I'm not as familiar with the source material outside of, you know, what I've played in the games. Like, I don't go on Google and look up all the Fallout wiki stuff, but I don't know. It's been an enjoyable experience for me. I think the characters are believable. It kind of found it to me. I think it took up to episode like 3 to kind of find the show's footing. But as they're revealing the character behind Walton Goggins, like what happened to him, and Maximus, like what's going on with him, and you can kind of see what's her name? I'm having a brain fart now. The girl,
Lucy McClain.
You kind of see her becoming more savage. Like, she's growing. This is the most character development I've ever seen in a video game adaptation, because you get to see that, like, that innocence of hers is being shattered as she's having to survive in the wasteland. She's having to do these really brutal things as she's moving along the course of the story, and she's being put in these situations where it's like, I have to do this or else I'm gonna die. So you get to see that character growth. You get to see her you know, that relationship with Maximus, and I'm sure she's going to bump into Walton Goggins again at some point. I mean, you've seen it, so you probably know already, but I find myself wanting to watch more. And what's even better with this is having read an interview with Jonathan Nolan. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Todd Howard, Fallout exists in the timeline, but it's not a direct adaptation of the game. It's just an adaptation of the universe, which I think was a really smart choice for them to make.
I really think it was a great success, and it looks season two was renewed. It was renewed for season two, which is no shock because of how well it's doing. It's one of the top five shows that people have watched on Amazon already. So it's absolutely done a great job of building that world. And I was worried for about a little while. I didn't know how well it's being promoted. You know, I recently talked about Tokyo Vice, which was not well promoted. And so I am very worried about the future for that show. Although they kind of closed and ended on season two. One of those kind of endings where they know they finished their arc on their original story and they kind of left the door open that they could come back, but they kind of already know what their fate is on that. So they kind of already knew what was going on in season two, but Tokyo Vice was outstanding. But yeah, Fallout has done a great job of building that world. We talked about a couple weeks ago about how California is trying to incentivize them to shoot season two in California. So I'm just very happy to see that people are getting behind another video game adaptation, my friend. I mean, after Halo, you got mixed thoughts on that one, from the highs of highs and lows of lows of that one in season two. I am so thrilled to see this. And plus, that has led, you know, the success of The Last of Us and this has led into more video game adaptations being announced or being developed. So, you know, it may not be Mass Effect yet, which has been announced, but I'm assuming, like, I think there will be a time. I know we keep talking about it and we keep going back to it, but I think there will be a time when that's done simply because of the success of Fallout and The Last of Us, and also Arcane and others that have seemingly done a great job of video game adaptations as well.
Oh, I'm sure it's just a matter of time before they start trying to. Actually, didn't they try to do that already? Like, there's a time when there were video game adaptations coming out. Like, I think back when Assassin's Creed came out, there's a couple others, Resident Evil, they tried to, you know, reboot that, and there's like Monster Hunter.
I mean, Resident Evil, you can say it was a financial success because the series made over $1 billion for Sony, but can you say any of them are a critical success?
No, absolutely not. But, you know, they were shooting all these targets and none of them were really hitting. So now with Fallout doing so well, do you think we're going to get not a renaissance, but like a gold rush, I guess, for video game adaptations?
I think we will, for good video game adaptations, because, you know, Hollywood has, over the course of the past, you know, two decades, since the 90s, they've dabbled quite a bit with video game adaptations, but they've never had their heart into it until the recent times. And once they figured out good ways of doing it and good ways of applying it, we've seen more successes than not in these video game adaptations. There's still other things, like when Netflix tried to do Resident Evil again, and we saw how bad that went. I mean, there's still, you know, Halo season one. There's still bad adaptations, obviously, for video games. Remember when you and I were living through a time where video game adaptations were like, oh man, here comes a video game adaptation. You know it's going to be bad. You know it's going to stink. I think the best ones we could actually hang our hats on were the Tomb Raider movies. And only the first one was really the one that was, you considered halfway successful. And that was only because of Angelina Jolie. And yeah, I'm glad we're in a much better place now. And video game adaptations are getting the respect they mostly deserve.
Do you think it has anything to do with the fact that a lot of these, what do you call, showrunners that are now creating these shows are young enough to have had experience actually playing these games growing up? Whereas back in the day, you know, with Halo, the original Halo, and they did the little briefcase march and a bunch of people dressed like Master Chief going in and they're bidding the contract out to these studio, not contract, but a script out to these studios. And there is the issue was, I think a lot of that was that these people who are making these things had never actually played the games before. So they had no knowledge of the source material. But now these showrunners are young enough to have had experience with the source material. So do you think that that has anything to do with it?
I think it has a lot to do with it, my friend, that the people that are working on these shows experience these games in a firsthand format. We can tell, you can probably correlate the failures of all these video game adaptations in the 90s, 2000s, and 2010s to the fact that who was working on them and who were the guys and gals responsible for being behind them. They probably had nothing to do with the games. Now, the actors, we, you know, in fact, the actors here on Fallout say they've never played the games. Walter Goggins said he's not a gamer. I get that. That's fine. But the people that are working and creating these concepts and these adaptations, I think it is so much better that they've had at least a taste of exactly the material, the source material that they worked on. And, you know, it's just like books. When you're adapting something from the books, Denis Villeneuve with Dune. Why is Dune part one and part two so good? Because Denis Villeneuve, from the time he was a teenager or a young man, he delved into the world of Dune and Frank Herbert's novels and absolutely knew how he wanted to go ahead and approach it from an early age. So we now have this experience that he has in adapting this. So yeah, I just think right now that's part of the reason why that these video game adaptations are doing so well.
Hey, well, keep them coming. Keep them coming. Like I hope that this is a lesson for these studios who want to make these video or these movies and these shows. Find somebody who is not just great at running a show, directing, producing, whatever. Find somebody who actually has a knowledge of what makes these stories so great. And that could be a recipe for success. And also the ticket to Mass Effect, I tell you.
I'm hoping so. But I think that with Mass Effect, there's got to be a price tag that I think that's holding it back. And I think once they alleviate themselves, if Mass Effect comes out to be a hit, whenever BioWare and EA put it out, whether you and I are still live when they do, but you know, if that comes out and that does well and reinvigorates the Mass Effect saga, I have a feeling you will see shortly thereafter the rights being procured by somebody. I think Legendary had its chance to go ahead, and at one time it did have the rights to it, I believe. Then you had Amazon. We talked about this a couple years ago. Deadline was supposedly saying that Amazon was circling around it. So I have a feeling we will see more and more video game adaptations. I can't wait to see all the other video game adaptations are coming about. I know Cool Bro just mentioned Minecraft. I know there's so many other video game adaptations that are already on the way. And yeah, I'm hoping that they just do it justice. That's all I'm asking.
I hope so. I really do. I know. Yeah. Minecraft's supposed to have Jack Black in it. If I remember correctly, he does one of the voices. So
well, then there's the Borderlands movie, and we may not need to.
Oh my gosh. I had someone ask me about that today as I did a little vendor event, and they're saying how they are a fan of Borderlands.
They may not be after
the movie, and I'm like, yeah, I get it. I know, right? They may not be after this movie comes out, so
it's looking like a very cheap knockoff of Guardians of the Galaxy, and I'll just leave it at that. So,
yeah, oh yeah.
But what are your thoughts out there on video game adaptations? Are, for the most part, they getting better in your eyes? What are your thoughts on Fallout, The Last of Us, Arcane on Netflix, all the video game adaptations that have come out recently? Mario Brothers movie was one of the biggest hits of the past 3-4 years. Tell us your thoughts on video game adaptations. Are they getting better in your eyes? PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com.
What is Planet Cool Stuff? It's your ultimate destination for insightful exploration from the realm of pop culture. Delve into the world of movies, video games, toys, cartoons, and visit with one-of-a-kind creators, discover incredible places, and see historical artifacts. Whether it's a toy room tour or exploring the best of pop culture cinema, Planet Cool Stuff has got you covered. Planet Cool Stuff, exclusively on Jinx Esports TV Canada.
Well, my friend, 1/2 hour down, 1/2 hour to go here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. It is Josh the Great Peterson, along with me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks so much for watching and listening. Josh, we'll give you an update on what's going on with the Happy Hoarder before we head on out. In fact, you know what, Josh? Before I get into NAB and we go ahead and tear through the Snyderverse in Facing the Franchise. If you can, give us an update of what's going on in the world of the Happy Hoarder.
Finally getting a lot of things back in stock here. We're doing the Central Texas Comic Con next weekend. So we'll be there Saturday and Sunday at the Extra Co. Event Center in Waco. So if you happen to be in the area, definitely stop on by. After that, April, May, I think is the day that we are, not day, sorry, the month that we are going to relaunch our website with you know, all the links and stuff will be fixed and you'll be able to order things once again. But for now, please just follow us on Facebook at The Happy Hoarder Store.
Please go ahead and check it out today at The Happy Hoarder Store right there. Anything relating to collectibles, you need to go ahead and make sure your first stop is The Happy Hoarder. Well, my friend, I went to go visit, you know, I am the conventioneer here in Vegas because they do have their share. And while I still haven't been able to get into CinemaCon, that's my still dream, one of my big dreams left on here, my big goals, my big bucket list things to do before I head on out of this galaxy. I wanted to go ahead and mention, I did stop by NAB 2024, always blessed to go ahead and check out what the broadcasting world is up to. And while it wasn't momentous by any occasion this year, seemed to be a little bit subdued. AI is obviously still a catchword and a catchphrase, and everybody's trying to figure out how to integrate that. It seems like the industry is in a state of flux, my friend, because broadcasting, as far as the quality of what you see and hear, has reached a point where it wants to go further, but we just don't have the technology here at home to support it. Because last time I checked, there's only a very small, less than a quarter of a percent or half a percent, that would be my guess, of homes have a television capable for 8K. And with most stations still broadcasting at 1080, it still seems like we're a long way of being able to advance our thoughts on that. So yeah, I think that there was a predominant thing, you know, people talking about all the stuff that they wanted to go ahead and utilize at NAB that gives you this advanced capability, the AI, the way it wants to go ahead and change the way that we do things. But still, I think we're still much a holding pattern because it's almost like it was 20 years ago when the technology of what you have in your house is so far behind of what you can actually do out there in the broadcasting world.
So do you think the reason for, okay, so what you're saying is the space between broadcasting.
What you can afford as a television, what you can afford as far as an entertainment medium, it doesn't really represent the capability of what actually you can get. You can get something so much more, you could get so much better picture, so much better resolution, so much sharper images, faster real-time productions, faster real-time information given to you, crisp, clear Dolby Atmos, even higher graded Dolby or stereo surround sound experience. But yet we're limited by the technology that we have supporting our infrastructure for not just here in America, but worldwide on what it can produce right now. Because of that, it still takes so long for our technology on a retail format to catch up to what the broadcasting industry already can do. Because I see it every time I go to NAB. They can do so many amazing things, Josh. The clarity of what they can produce and you know, as far as on an audio and visual level, is so much more advanced than what you get on a daily basis.
So do you think the companies who create these consumer electronics should do something to make that technology more affordable? Or do you think that the people who create the broadcasting products are just way too far ahead of the curve in order for people to catch up?
It just needs to be a change. They just need to, almost like be in a holding pattern themselves. The technology that they have is great, but when you can't really apply it in a large platform, it really doesn't make much sense having it, showing it off. You should try to find ways to make technology like that, like 4K channels. 4K should become a broadcasting standard across the board, and it's not. And that to me is appalling. It's like when you go to YouTube TV, you have to pay extra for 4K television. Who thought of that? Who does that now in 2024? It's absolutely ridiculous, Josh.
Nickel and diamond, yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. I'm not going to pay extra just to get 4K. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And the thing is, it should be a broadcasting standard so that we can start looking into broadcasting on 8K. Because 8K is so much more advanced than what we have, than what you're probably seeing now in 720 or 1080. It's just so much more advanced, the technology and what we could do. When I go to these NABs or CESs or you name it, when I go to these conventions, Josh, it's just so much more advanced than what we as a audience are able to see. And it's almost a shame in a way that we could be presented with so much better technology yet choose not to.
So do you think that in the case of these companies, you think their money is better spent trying to fully harness the power of existing technology rather than trying to take those jumps forward?
Well, that's always the key. I mean, Matt's man in the detail as far as always wanting to push something forward, always want to make something bigger, better, more beautiful, et cetera, et cetera. So, and more efficient. And Alan's in the chat with some great thoughts in regards to AI. I know us as a normal audience doesn't want AI, but unfortunately there are companies, too many companies out there investing in AI. They're dealing with AI. They're integrating their products with AI. Heck, our phones, Josh, already have AI built in. You can go right now to Google, Bing, whatever, and AI is incorporated with them. It's just, it's something, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to avoid at some point in time. Something that you're accessing is going to have AI, whether you like it or not. And I understand that you know, there's a very big apprehension to utilizing AI as far as what, you know, I mean, my gosh, we've seen so many Terminator movies now, Josh. You know, you don't think that's out there in regards to AI, you're crazy. It is something that we're very fearful of, but I just think that we need to refine and stop. You know, we're going to continue to push the envelope on that and other technologies. We can't stop that, but we need to create something on a larger platform that makes it, that helps us as the general everyday consumer take advantage of it.
Yeah, but I also feel like us as the everyday general consumer need to have things be more accessible to us.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. We need it more in our faces. We need the ability to go ahead and say, you know what? This should be a broadcasting standard. This should be something that every available television, of every available radio, of every available entertainment platform can get.
Here's the problem though. Like look at Netflix, right? We're with Netflix,
they just reported 9 million new subscribers and almost 270 million subscribers, by the way.
But look at it has tiers now. Like you can pay for a tier that has advertising, pay for a tier that's just like standard, and then there's a tier for HD stuff.
Best you have the same thing. Did.
Right. You have the same thing with Max. So same thing with Max, same thing with Paramount Plus, and all these streaming channels are doing this now. And we're basically going to get to the point where 8K, if it ever becomes the industry standard, it's going to be locked behind a paywall. And at that point, why do you keep pushing the envelope, pushing that technology forward when nobody's gonna have the means or really even want to pay the extra money for it?
That's true, but it should just become industry standards. But again, that I know that's for our governments out there, wherever you're at, that's going to be a low priority, is to make something better for our entertainment purposes when there's so much going on in the world. And as it should be, it should not be a priority as far as making it an industry standard, but it should be something that should be talked about at the very least, something that should be, you know, like the FCC, they should be more out in front as far as talking about what needs to improve with the general audience, because so many of the things that they do, I'll give the U.S. government example, because obviously you and I live in the U.S. That's probably what we have to base it on. But for decades now, they have decades old technology that they're still basing a lot of their laws and descriptions off of, Josh, and that has to change. That has to be upgraded along with the way we perceive things as well. I mean, you and I go to these conventions. We go to the E3s. We go to the CESs. We go to, you see the advancements in technology and make, man, that'd be just awesome if I could get that kind of picture in my home. Well, you can, but by sheer logistics, sheer cost, and sheer drive, or I guess sheer non-reliance by, you know, governments everywhere, they just don't want to go ahead and invest more into our future. But by the time you and I are dead, long since buried, I know we keep going back to that on this Today Show, and that's my bad for doing so, but, you know, maybe a century from now, that will be realistic, where it'll be 16K or 32K or whatever, as far as sharp, as far as a standard for what they're doing and broadcasting. And it'll be so realistic and lifelike, you and I would go like, wow, oh man, that's so weird. Okay, I got it. That's just so realistic. But I just think that, you know, we have this technology, yet so few people are allowed to access it and use it. And that to me is, it's just a shame, because it's so much, it could provide so much more to our community if we were able to go ahead and access these great things on a regular basis.
Oh, absolutely, man. It's just, well, I mean, look at this, is this kind of a standard market practice. So too, look at the pharmaceutical industry, right? You have people that, hey, look, we have these pills that will keep you from aging really fast, but the common person cannot afford them. So if you want to write a six-figure check, you know, we'll make sure you have access. That's the same thing with this. Like, you want access to 4K and these 70, 80 inch televisions that have, you know, instant, whatever you want to call it. You can do this, but yeah, you have to be in a whole separate tax bracket to have access to this technology. So that's the kind of practice that the predatory practices that I think need to change in order for all of us to get on the same page with this stuff.
Well, we'll see what happens. I also like the fact that IMAX was something that was readily talked about, because there was a time where IMAX just was something that was put off to the side around coronavirus. And I think the advancement of Dune Part 2 and how tremendous that was, the success for IMAX, has really put IMAX back in the forefront. So that's awesome to see. And we'll definitely talk about more about that as we go along here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. But again, if you have thoughts on the future of broadcasting and the way it should be promoted to everyone out there around the world as an entertainment medium, please go ahead and let us know. How do you like your entertainment? Do you want it sharper, better? Do you want it better sounding? Do you want better picture? Do you think you deserve that now? Do you think there should be an industry standard that is held higher for us out there because the technology is certainly there? Do you think that we should get it? Please let us know your thoughts. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com.
If you're tired of sifting through flea markets for rare and unique games, we can help. Retro City Games in Henderson, Nevada, only 5 minutes from the Las Vegas Strip, has all your favorite gaming staples, classics, and a wide selection of rare games with new stuff always appearing on our shelves. Come in and chat with Nicole or Doug about your love of games and watch as they help you complete your collection or find your childhood favorite. And don't forget, Retro City Games loves trade-ins. So if you have any Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega, Xbox, PlayStation, or even PC games, come in and visit Retro City Games today. Welcome to the new metropolis of gaming, Retro City Games.
Well, my friend, it is now time to face the franchise. And I usually let you pick the topic for facing the franchise. I really, after watching Rebel Moon 2, The Scargiver on Netflix, I said, Josh, I really think we need to do a facing the franchise on the Snyderverse. And this is going to be part review, part op-ed. And it's going to be on Zack Snyder himself as a director. I'm going to be honest with you, Josh. I have watched much of what you've watched in the Snyderverse over the past, 15 years plus, since obviously 300 came out and that shocked the world and revolutionized, you know, so much we were doing, and everybody wanted to do that same type of movie, and it was done to death in the mid-2000s to the point where nobody wants to do it again.
Yeah.
That style. But 300 was a absolutely fantastic, you know, way to go ahead and represent yourself. And then he's made quite a few movies since. But let's talk about this, my friend. Rebel Moon 2, Scargiver, it comes on the heels of what we saw in December with Rebel Moon Part 1. And that was... Hold on.
Before we do that, you might have just been about to do this. What were your... Originally, if I remember correctly, you and I watched Child of Fire and our thoughts were like, huh, you know, it's not bad, but it's not amazing, right? Are we, is that where we were?
I think we were right about a 5 or 6 out of 10 because the fact is it was very formulaic. Mm-hmm. The special effects were interesting, but it was something where, okay, it didn't bring anything new or original to the genre, but it was a popcorn flick, I think, at best for us. So then Scar Giver comes out, and I'm watching this, my friend. And to me, this is absolutely a travesty in all sorts of ways. I will tell you, we talked about Dune Part 2, and you know, you and I have a little differing opinions on it, but we both think it's a very good movie, very good to outstanding movie. And when it comes right down to it, the Dune world is based a lot of what the people, they're battling for spice. They made spice really the backbone of what that movie is all about and the fight for it. And you could sense the importance of spice in and of itself. And then you go to Rebel Moon, Part 2, The Scar Giver, and you spend an hour on space farming. And you just really decide, you know what? I'm going to shove this down your throat as far as the grain is concerned. And then after an hour, you decide to totally abandon the concept of grain and make it absolutely zero important for the rest of the film. This movie is absolutely putrid. It's a dumpster fire, my friend. I will say in no given order and no given context, other than to say it was a dumpster fire. If you want your slow-mo fix, absolutely go watch this film because you're going to get more slow-mos than a slow-mo can slow-mo. And if you want your lens flares more than what a J.J. Abrams movie can give you, by God, you stop on by there too. But if you want some weird character development where they all sit around a table and talk about the backstories that I thought were supposed to do in part one anyways, it's not what a part one is supposed to be about, and you're still doing it like this late into the series, that's ridiculous. But yeah, it is awful, my friend. The first hour is absolutely terrible. The second hour is, you know, they're going to battle, I guess, and do all that, the climactic battle. And then Anthony Hopkins, for the character that he voices, the robot could have just finished the battle against everybody in 5 minutes. And somehow they don't, you know, it's just absolutely just the stupid things that were done. The climactic battle between the heroine and the antagonist. The fact that he actually lived anyways and got reborn or rebirthed or revived is just absolutely ridiculous. It was just like something out of, for a $200 million movie, it looked like they spent $10 on it at the dollar store. This movie sucked. Before I go into the Snyderverse as a whole and my theme for the day, I will let you go ahead and share your thoughts on Rebel Moon 2 Scar Giver.
So it's funny because people are still going to watch this movie anyways, whether or not we say
on Netflix.
Say that it sucks. Yeah, it's on Netflix. Netflix is going to look at it and be like, oh, hey, we had so many people watch this movie, steaming pile of garbage or not, that it must be good. So we're going to keep green lighting these films. So they're still making money off it, regardless of whether or not it's good or not. And that's kind of the, you know, another issue of these streaming services. My problem with it so far, I'm about 35 minutes in. I just finished the whole grain farming stuff, right? Okay, and you are right. You ever want to see the most beautiful farming footage you've ever seen, you can definitely watch the first half hour of this movie. But
why would you want to do that in a sci-fi space movie?
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm 100% on the same page with you right now. My issue with it is a couple things. One, you already mentioned I was tired of, was it Ed Skrein's character? Like, I was tired of him at the end of the last movie. Like, I didn't even like him in the last movie. He was an incredibly annoying bad guy.
Yep. Let him live. They found a way to go ahead and revive him based off the, you know, dollar store special effects that they actually provided. And man, it just looked bad.
It was, I don't, the, the decision to bring him back to life was absolutely horrible. And what in the world was going on with that scene where she sits there? The most confusing assassination scene I've ever seen in my life. They walk in, all the people playing the violins or whatever, and then all the senators or whatever the guys are in the uniforms and robes start like stabbing this king. Like he walks in like, oh, what are you guys all looking at me so funny
and,
for? Like,
and, he does death of the princess. Gee, we
yeah, didn't know like, that this whole happen. Family doesn't know they're about to get murdered. Like that was completely unbelievable. Even for a sci-fi movie, that's unbelievable. And then the adopted father or whatever blames it on, you know, what's her face, Scargiver girl. And that scene, and then she just like runs away. Nobody chases her. Nothing about that scene makes sense or is logical. My last thing, and granted, I'm only 35 minutes in. What in the world is wrong with the dialogue in this movie? Nobody talks like that. Like, this feels like it was written, you know, no offense to Zack Snyder. Like, I do love a lot of his work, but this feels like it was a story put together by an elementary school student.
So that leads me to what I would love to talk about, which I disagree with you. I'm not a big Zack Snyder fan, yet I have somehow succumbed to watching a lot of his work. So again, we won't touch on 300 because 300 is what it is. But let's start off with The Watchmen, Sucker Punch, Man of Steel, which you are a fan of, and I'm not, BVS, Dawn of Justice, Justice League, Army of the Dead, Rebel Moon 1 and 2. None of these films have garnered any critical acclaim. Most of them have been disappointments or outright failures at the box office. BVS, I think, was probably the most successful of these films. But the Justice League, you know, even though it made $600 million, it was still considered a financial flop to the point where they've made a new universe out of it since then. They've kind of said, Zack Snyder, you hit the road. James Gunn, you're coming in. You're doing the universe from us from now on.
Okay, so I'm not a... Like, I like Zack Snyder, but I'm not a, you know, the world's biggest Snyder fanboy. Like, I'm not going to go start a petition for him or anything. But I look at Justice League, and I don't know if I've posed this question to you before, but had he not left the project because his daughter died, and had all that bad stuff not happened with Joss Whedon, like, I feel like Joss Whedon pretty much tore apart whatever was left of the DCU. Yes. But had he stayed on that project, I feel like we definitely would have gotten to see the end of his vision play out.
The director cut is the thing I've liked the most from him since 300.
Right. And had that have been the cut, you know, a smaller cut of that, had his version been what we got to see originally, I don't think all this turmoil would have happened within the DCU and we'd have gotten to see, you know, what happened next.
So I leave this to you, my friend. Again, if I'm a studio head, and I often, we have these conversations where I like to say, okay, we're in the boardroom, Josh, you and I are the studio heads. And I look at this laundry list of disappointments and failures. There is no way on God's green earth I would ever green light anything over $30 million for Zack Snyder again. I would never green light a big budget for him again. The record's not there, my friend. You are a bigger fan of Man of Steel than a lot of people because it wasn't critically rated high. Then also as well, PBS, even though it did generate about $700-800 million, it was not very well thought of by critics, you know, and just a lot of people. It's actually been forgotten about amongst the annals of DC movies. And it's just the fact that there's a history there, man. You can only live off the success of 300 for so long, but I just feel Zack Snyder has done that. And I just think he's become a caricature of himself. And you see this movie is probably only 28 minutes long, but somehow got stretched out to 2 hours plus because of all the slow-mos, my friend. I know I'm joking when I say that, but it's absolutely riddled with the misuse of things that he used to do pretty good. Is absolutely mind-boggling. Like you said, the dialogue is awful. The storytelling, just so many issues with it. I just think at this point in time, maybe it's best not to greenlight or bankroll another Zack Snyder film anymore.
So I do have a couple of thoughts. I think that you have a good point, but it's funny because if you read a lot of interviews with other directors and they name like who in the industry they think is doing incredibly innovative things behind the camera, a lot of them name Zack Snyder.
Yeah, and tell them I don't watch this movie and then maybe that'll change their mind.
Right. But I mean, as long as you have that kind of power pulling for you, I don't think that that's going to stop studios from approaching him about doing projects for them. Granted, I mean, what the last couple things he's done were on, Netflix. I don't know what that looks like beyond what his career looks like beyond Netflix moving forward, but he's got friends in high places and he's got a big fan base. So it's hard to know like what is going to happen with his career. I look back and 300 was great. Dawn of the Dead, I don't really remember much about that one.
That one was actually a good one. You know, that goes back to, you know, his past there. Dawn of the Dead was, you know, obviously bad. Army of the Dead was okay for what it was, but that was just another streaming film.
To Dawn of the Dead?
Pardon?
Is Army of the Dead connected to Dawn of the Dead, or is that
I think it is. So I think it is connected in some small way to it. I think he kept it in that universe somewhat, but it's just time. I just think it's time if you're a big studio to not put your money into it, because Zack Snyder over the past 15 years has really not gotten, you know, your return on your investment.
Yeah, I don't know. And then like I heard about what his plans were for like a sequel to 300, but it's based off Alexander the Great. And I read about him, like, honestly, like I would just, if that were a movie you were making, I just don't think I'd be interested anymore. Not for the content matter, but just
because. Would you give him $200 million to fund his next movie?
No, probably not. Not at all. Well, it depends on what it was, I guess. I don't know, man. I'm torn on this. Like,
you're much more lenient than I.
I think that Zack Snyder is innovative and he uses a lot of really pretty colors in his movies. And
yeah, you like his color palettes, but yeah,
I love the color palettes. And I think that there is something he could do right. He just has to, he's got no heart in what he's doing anymore. And I don't know if that has anything to do with, you know, what happened with his daughter or, you know, whatever's going on with him behind the scenes. But I think that he just needs to find something he's passionate about and get out there and do it. And watching Rebel Moon, I don't think that Rebel Moon is the passion project that he should be focusing on.
What are your thoughts out there on the Zack Snyderverse? And also as well, of course, Rebel Moon 2, Scargiver. Josh and I don't have high hopes for Josh. Again, you might want to go ahead and check. Yeah, well, pain yourself to check out the rest of the film. But what are your thoughts out there on Rebel Moon 2, Scargiver, and of course the Snyderverse as a whole? Is it time for Zack Snyder to look at something different options per se? Or would you still bankroll him for future movies with Zack Snyder? Please let us know your thoughts on the future of Zack Snyder and his work. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. Well, my friend, it's been a great episode. Any last thoughts before we head on out? I told you I would put out something that's a little bit controversial.
Before we leave Zack Snyder thoughts in the dust, did you like Watchmen or Sucker Punch?
Watchmen is way too long. Sucker Punch, I kind of liked. It has some really ugly themes in it, and I think you can't get past the ugly themes. But yeah. Then you started to see him fall in love with certain aspects he should reserve himself from doing, but started to get into way the slow-mo. You start to see way too much excess on that. I thought Watchmen would be a better movie. It was cut an hour shorter. And I would think Sucker Punch will never get its due as a decent film. But again, the themes of that film probably will always prevent it from getting any more acclaim.
You know, Watchmen was, it was a movie, but I think Sucker Punch was really kind of his love letter to filmmaking. And yes, it had some very, very dark themes in it, but like you could tell, like he was really into what he was doing in that movie.
And I think that's the one he has issues with the most, I think, in recent interviews in regards to Sucker Punch. So funny how that is. So for Josh Peterson, this is Gerald Glassford. It's another beautiful day in paradise right here in the Pop Culture Cosmos. We thank you for listening. And here's hoping you have yourself a great